This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
You will see Luke Hancock here momentarily, Tony Bennett as well this hour. And we're not done. We go till 10 a.m. Loads of stuff for you to talk about. Hoops on the brain, though, Wes. With that said, let's bring on our man, Luke Hancock.
Come on now.
Front and center. All right, Luke, I already have...
Good morning.
Good morning. Already expressed my disappointment getting done with the radio show last night. I was dialed in, ready to go. Thought I've got Louisville and Florida State. This is going to be a second half rock'em sock'em game. By the time I got comfortable on the couch and the dinner in front of me, it was 40-16. What in the world happened last night?
Yeah, I know you have been talking barbecue all day. You should have gone cold sandwiches if you wanted to see the good part of this game right at the very beginning. If you took your time, man, you didn't see good basketball in this one. They were out tough. Honestly, I thought it was men versus boys early in this game. Louisville, two games in a row now. They don't come out with the intensity you need to win in the ACC. Even teams kind of struggling like Miami, that's a good basketball team, and they've done it on the defensive end and then came out and beat them up. With Isaiah Wong, but Florida State is a different animal. Man, these guys are playing fantastic basketball. They're playing team ball. And as they get healthier, with Scotty Barnes out and MJ Walker kind of nursing that ankle, he went out in their last game for just a little bit. These guys are putting the pieces together. I love the way they move the basketball. They've always been great on the defensive end, and we know how long and athletic that team is. And they got the alpha dog back. You know, it was Trent Forrest last year, and that guy is most certainly MJ Walker this year.
Luke, let's go back to a little bit about what Florida State has done post-pause, if you will, here. Lights out against NC State, grind out the Carolina game Saturday at home, now go on the road and handle Louisville almost from the jump here. They and Virginia have done what, in your mind, in the last week to kind of dispel maybe any early wobbles in the season?
Yeah, they've certainly separated themselves. I think Virginia is playing fantastic basketball. You just mentioned Florida State's wins. They're probably still scoring against NC State. But these two teams are certainly separating themselves. I think it's based on culture, veteran guard play, and toughness. You know, these teams, they've been around each other a long time. And we're trying to piece it together with a lot of new guys in this crazy environment, with a lot of the layoffs, all the crazy just non-continuity things, if you will, that this season brings. The teams that have been there and done that, the teams that have guys that have been around each other for a long time, they're having the most success. And again, I point to point guard play, the guys that have the basketball in their hands the most and have to set opportunities up for other guys on their team. And I look at Kihei Clark and I look at MJ Walker. And I think those guys, as the head of the snake for these two teams, have done a fantastic job. Oh, by the way, these are two fantastic teams on the defensive end. And you may not have your offense there every night, but if your defense is there every night, you can win even if you're not playing that well.
Luke, you know, the other thing that was so impressive about Florida State, and all your points are spot on, but MJ Walker scored 2 points last night. Two. And if you'd have told me before the game that MJ Walker is going to be held to a field goal, you'd have gone, man, Louisville's in business. Well, you know what? He finds other ways to beat you. 10 assists, plays great defense. And it goes to your point that, hey, it's next man up. Polite doesn't even dress last night. Just another dude that will give you quality minutes and so forth. But Florida State's got such great quality depth that they are just a nightmare for people. And they can beat you inside, outside, offense, defense. They've got that championship DNA. Leonard has really built quite a program.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. The versatility of this team is so impressive. You know, they can beat you throwing the ball inside. Raekwon Gray can beat you doing just about anything. They're long. They're athletic. I mean, is there a more dynamic player in this league than Scotty Barnes, the way he gets to the basket? And you mentioned MJ Walker's 2 points. Right at the start of the half, he walks down the lane, strolls down there, a little Sunday stroll to go get a wide open layup to set the tone for that second half, a really important bucket to start them off. And you're right. You got to throw out the 5 turnovers. I know that's a big, important part of the game. But the fact that, again, your alpha dog, a guy that scored a ton of points, he's had 15-plus in 6 games already. He had 15-plus in 6 games all of last season. So he stepped up on the scoring end. And you're right. You hear he has 2 points. Maybe you think FSU struggles a little bit. But they did not. 10 assists, man. He was absolutely rolling.
All right, Luke, let's turn to tonight. Duke and Pitt is the headliner at the Pete. This feels like a big game for really both schools. And I'm curious to see how this one is handled, because feels like it's going to be bigger on defense than it will be on offense, really, for both schools.
Yeah, that means I like Pittsburgh. You know, this is a huge game. I think this is one of those separating games where you figure out who's real and who's not. Both these teams kind of could really use a win to push them into the conversation. Are they going to be a top four contender in this league? We know how good Pitt's been lately. And again, their last loss coming against a Louisville team that played really well in that game, and Pitt was down a ton of bodies. I wonder what would have happened and how we would really be talking about this Pittsburgh team had they been really healthy. Had Justin Champagne been there, who's having a player of the year caliber year already. Now, if Duke shoots the ball well and they can pressure those guards, and Pitt hasn't shot it great all year, but if that happens and Duke can knock down some perimeter shots, start to space out that Pittsburgh defense, I could see them playing well. But this one's 50-50 for me. If both teams don't shoot it well, I like Pittsburgh just because those guys don't play with the chip on their shoulder. I know this gets used all the time. They play with a boulder on their shoulder. Justin Champagne leads up the guys who play much bigger than they are. I mean, this dude's stats this year have been incredible, and he is certainly trying to make SportsCenter every time he gets out in transition.
Jalen Johnson's back. Matthew Hurt's been out of sight for Duke. Champagne, awesome. Who's the best player on the floor tonight in that game?
Yep. Ooh, what a question. I'm going to say it's Justin Champagne. You know, I got to go with what I've seen this year. I know people probably grill me and say Matthew Hurt. But I think Pittsburgh's playing great team basketball. And again, Justin Champagne's back. Where is this Pitt team? You know, if he's back for that Louisville game. So Matthew Hurt's been great. He's rebounding the ball well. He's obviously an elite scorer, and he can do it inside and out, kill you in a bunch of different ways. But what I've seen from Justin after the break, he's refreshed, he's confident, he's trying to motivate his team, and that's what I love. He's making the guys around him better. Matthew Hurt, yes, DJ Stewart's played well, yes, Jeremy Roach has played well, but they got to get another piece. And is that Jalen Johnson? Maybe. Last time he played, man, did they get beat up by an Illinois team at Cameron Indoor, and they talk about some grown men on that squad in the front court.
All right, 7 lineups in 8 games for Coach K. We ran the graphic in hour one here, Luke. Is he still tinkering? I mean, and I know that, again, small sample size. This is what this season is. How much growth is there? He said yesterday in the conference call, we're finally back whole. What does that mean for him with, you know, 7 different lineups in 8 games?
Well, first of all, he's not the only one. You know, Roy Williams is doing it. Coach Mack is going to have to do it. He's going to have to find a way to interject some energy into that starting lineup after these last 2 games. There are a lot of coaches that are figuring it out, and this just speaks to the times. It speaks to the pandemic. You know, you've got Mark Williams sitting over there on that bench. You got Joey Baker sitting over there. I think that one of the most important guys on Duke's roster, Jordan Goldwire, is one of the best on-ball defenders in the entire country. He's got a lot of pieces to the puzzle there to try and mix in, make guys happy, and make his team as best as possible. You know, again, I bring up UNC just because I think Roy is kind of tinkering on, do I play RJ Davis and Caleb Love together? Do I let them split time? Is it those guys down the stretch? Is that who I got to ride? And I think Coach K is doing the same thing with DJ Stewart and Jeremy Roach. Those guys have scored the basketball, but they haven't really made the other guys better outside of Matthew Hurt. So, again, I think they need one more piece to start playing well. Jordan Goldwire is so solid. He does it on the defensive end. If Jalen Johnson comes in there and plays well, maybe this is the time when Duke starts to look like one of the better teams in the ACC.
Luke, the other ACC game tonight with the men, Cuse in Miami. Man, the Canes. I've just been so impressed with the job Jim Larrañaga has done, given all the bodies he doesn't have. I mean, they're fresh off of upsetting Louisville at home. They're taking this thing on the road. You go through their laundry list of injuries, you're like, how can this team beat anybody? And, man, not only have they won a couple games in league play, they've also lost 3 by 2 or less. What could have, would have, could have, should have, assuming everybody was whole. So that's number one for Miami. And the flip side with Syracuse, for their next 5 at home, if they're going to make a move to get in the upper tier of the league, you got to sense that right now is kind of go time for them, isn't it? This is kind of a, not necessarily a must, but hey, you got to start showing some signs of life. It's got to start with a team in Miami that's showing up with 7 scholarship players.
Absolutely. I think you are spot on right there. And Miami's defense has been there. Now, I don't know if you can get another 30-point outburst from Isaiah Wong, but the thing is, on the other side, Syracuse seems to be feast or famine from the three-point line. If they go out there and they shoot 10% or 15% from three, Miami's going to have a great opportunity to win this basketball game. They've got to do it by committee on the offensive end, but Nasir Brooks gives them a front-court presence. They can get them some offensive rebounds. They can be physical inside with Mareg Dolezal. And so if those guys can play well enough on the offensive end, their defense can get it done against Syracuse. And you're right, these are two teams kind of trying to separate themselves from the bottom of the pack. They don't want to be mentioned in that bottom four anymore. And Miami, off the Louisville win, they got to be playing with a tremendous amount of confidence. I know Coach Larrañaga, I played for him at George Mason. He is absolutely defense first. I'll tell you this story real quick. When Rick Pitino calls Jim Larrañaga as I'm being recruited, and they're telling, he's trying to talk about my game, and he says, you need somebody to throw the basketball in a clutch situation. Luke's your guy. Need someone to go knock down a free throw. Luke's your guy. Make a good pass. Luke's your guy. You need somebody to play some defense. Luke's not your guy. But I know Jim Larrañaga prioritizes that defense every single possession. I was a little bit more keen to shooting the rock than playing that defense. But
I love it.
Hey, real quick. Jeff Walls has got Louisville's women atop the AP poll. What a statement he's made, huh? And he's done a phenomenal job there.
I just think about this year. You know, I've talked to Coach Walls almost every week, and him just trying to get scheduling done, trying to get teams to come play him. The guy said he's pulling out a map. He draws a circle within a bus ride of Louisville, Kentucky, and just starts making phone calls trying to find games early on in this season. These girls are playing fantastic basketball. I think about that front court with Dana Evans and Haley Van Lith that is just getting better and better and better. He talked about it in the offseason, the versatility of this team. They can throw it inside. They can absolutely kill you in pick and rolls. They can get out in transition. They're a good three-point shooting team. And I think most important in this year, this goes for men's, women's, this goes for college basketball in general, they're having fun. Jeff Walls has them playing loose. He talks about this is an opportunity. This is a great thing to get to play basketball. And as tough as this year has been with all the ups and downs and the craziness, these girls are pumped up to be able to get out there and play and represent the University of Louisville.
Well said.
Yeah, great stuff. Hey, Luke, thanks a lot. Appreciate the time as always. Have a good week, my man.
Thank you, guys. We'll do it again soon. Y'all take care.
All right, Luke Hancock, part of our ACC Network Basketball Analyst Group. You can see him on Nothing But Net as well. Don't forget, we've got men's basketball for you tomorrow night, a Wednesday night collection of games for you. Starts at 5 o'clock Eastern time with Boston College visiting number 16, Virginia Tech. Mike Monaco, Dan Bonner will be there for that one. Then at 7 o'clock, Jay Alter, Malcolm Huckabee will have coverage from Smith Center in Chapel Hill. Steve Forbes takes Wake Forest to see Roy Williams and the Tar Heels. Always streaming live on the ESPN app and right here for you on ACC Network. All right, buckle up, kids, because when we come back, Packer has charted them again. The return of the infamous ACC index card right here on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. Tony Bennett, head basketball
coach. Get the phone ready.
The UVA Wahoos will join us coming up in about 15 minutes. All right, it's the first
you wanna,
what's the matter? You all right?
I was going to say, do you want to explain the history of the infamous? Yes, I'm nervous. Do you want to explain the history of the ACC infamous index card?
Yes. This started on my
old radio. For those that are joining the show.
Yeah, this started on my old radio show, Primetime with the Pac-Man, where I used to get bombarded by every fan base known to man. Referees are out to get us. We did this. Everybody had a conspiracy theory. So I came up with a way to appease everyone. And that is a thing called the infamous ACC index card. And for the record, it was done 20-some-odd years ago. It's going to be done here in the next 20 seconds. This is not to form any opinion. This is not to tell you I was right or I was wrong or Wes doesn't know what he's talking about or Wes is a genius. This is nothing more than the numbers when it comes to ACC men's basketball, right? That's all it is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
These are the numbers with ACC versus ACC games. And it involves nothing more than how many times you got called for a foul. It involves nothing more than how often you go to the free throw line and how it compares to other teams within the league. We're not telling you anything here, right? And this is the beauty. This is actually the genius of the infamous ACC index card. You at home, or you listening to us on SiriusXM 371, can form your own opinion and come up with your own theory, right? That's all this is. Go ahead, Wes.
Why is it infamous? Why is it infamous?
It's infamous because when I originally did this back, I started this in 1998 or 99. That was 20-some years ago. The ACC office at the time, which there were still some folks there present today, were so mad at me that they called fuming. How dare you? And I'm like, how dare I do what? I'm just telling you what the numbers are. I'm not telling you that, you know, Duke gets all the calls or North Carolina goes to the free throw. The numbers are the numbers. Hey, don't look
or
at
NC State gets no calls or in NC, the case of many.
Whatever your best conspiracy theory is regarding the Atlantic Coast Conference, that's what this whole thing was designed for, right? I've never said one boo word about Team X gets this or Team Y gets that. So that's why it became the infamous ACC index card. So we have decided it's time. We're bringing it back. So given the sample size, some teams have only played a couple games. Some have played six. Again, we're not here to tell you anything other than here's what the numbers state on the infamous ACC index card. Let it rip. Most fouls. Again, these are only ACC conference games. This has got nothing to do with any non-conference. All right? The most and least fouls. Boston College has been called for the most, along with North Carolina. And Louisville's right behind them. Right? There it is. These are the top lists on the most side. BC, North Carolina tied for first. Louisville's really third. Miami fourth. The least, Georgia Tech, only 47 fouls. And keep in mind, Georgia Tech's only played three conference games. Duke's only played a couple. They're at 66, Notre Dame 68, Syracuse 69. Most and least fouls. Anything you'd like to mention there, Mr. Durham? Go right ahead.
North Carolina has played one more league game, or one less league game than Boston College.
Form your own opinion. I
just
said here.
Adding to the information. That's all I'm doing. Just adding to the information.
The beauty of this card is exactly what you just said. Hey, you're right. You're 100% right.
Yeah.
So whatever thought you've got about, oh, I can't believe, you would be 100% right. Run with it. The numbers are the numbers. I don't make the numbers up. This is the actual calls. Right?
Right.
Next graphic. Okay. Next graphic, foul margin. You know who's the best in the league? Is Miami. They've been called for 25 fewer fouls in the ACC games that they've played. 25 less. Hokies are doing a job too. Man, if you're a Hokie fan, you got to love the way the whistle's blowing. You're playing good defense. That's why. 19 fewer. Notre Dame, 17 fewer. And hey, NC State, I hear from you guys all the time. Look at that number. You guys are fourth best in the league. 11 fewer fouls called on you in terms of the margin. Now, the worst, hey, I know we're going to get Tony Bennett coming up here in about 10 minutes. Hey, wahoo, wah, you're the worst in the league, almost by far. Virginia's been called for 24 more fouls than everybody else in their brother in conference games, followed by Florida State, then North Carolina, and Syracuse. So, you know, for all you NC State fans, oh, North Carolina gets all the calls. Well, there's the numbers. Those are the numbers. I mean, you come up with your own theory. Come up with your own theory.
Yep. All right. Now, we've given you the boilerplate of the infamous ACC index card. That is fouls and foul margins, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're going to give you the real dirt in the details of the infamous ACC index card.
Wes,
this is
no
the
dirt.
One.
No dirt.
That caused. No. I'm just saying the dirt in the details. This is where the granulars start to settle in into how you formulate the real methodology of the ACC index card right here.
Free throws. Hey, man, that team goes to the line all day long. Well, you might be right if you're Miami. How about the Canes? $138. They're number one in the league. Hokey, hokey, hokey high. You're number two. Louisville, 113. BC, 108. There's the best in the league. Go on the line. These are ACC games only. Now, the flip side, hey, Virginia. Yeah, you guys are getting called for fouls left and right more than everybody else, and you're going to the free throw line. Of course, you'd never go to the free throw line after the Clemson game because all you do kept making threes all night. Georgia Tech second, Syracuse, Duke. Yeah, you saw how you NC State fans always yakking at me. Yeah, Duke, fourth on that list. Least going to the line. Packed, I swear, Coach K, those guys go to the line every time. Really? Well, here's what the numbers tell me. But you got a theory? Hey, go with it. Run with it. You love how
go
this
the
works.
Last one.
You love how this works.
I do. I think this is absolutely
sheer
just
genius.
That's why the
it?
First time you ever told me about this, I love this, and I think it's hilarious because it just destroys all the biased commentary. I mean, you got Virginia leading the league and least amount of free throw attempts, and then there's one coming up here. And the other part is Miami and Virginia Tech. I mean, Virginia Tech's at the top. Miami's toward the bottom with two conference wins. And now all of a sudden you're sitting there thinking, well, wait a second. How in the world does all this fit?
Yeah,
right? I mean.
Come up with your theory.
Yeah.
That's why I came up with this 20-some-odd years ago. And I'm telling you, people lost their minds, including members at the time in the conference office. I mean, they went nuts on me. Mark Packer, we need to
now
talk
here's
to you.
The one.
About what?
This. All right, here's
your league,
here's one.
Your refs,
these
are your calls. I didn't make anything up. It's what it is.
I got to tell you, I'm really excited about this last one because there's a certain fan base that always talks about differential in free throws.
Well, let it rip. Infamous ACC index card. Free throw attempt margin.
What is the Wolfpack doing up there?
What's
the Wolfpack never shoots free throws pack?
Boy, and no wonder why I've not been getting as many texts by the NC State folks.
Mock, we always don't shoot free throws. We never shoot free throws, Mock.
Yeah. Well, Notre Dame's doing it better than anybody else along with Miami at a plus 32. Hokies again. Man, Virginia Tech's doing a lot of good things, man. They're on the good side of a lot of stuff here. They're winning a bunch of games. The worst, as far as, man, the other team shoot more free throws. We never get the line. Here's Virginia again, right? Virginia might be the number one team this week in accounting. How many times have you seen Virginia on the top of one of the bad sides here? Again, you come up with your own theory, right? I'm just saying. Syracuse and Virginia tied for the worst. Clemson and Florida State. Some pretty good teams on that worst side. Saying.
Ooh, tell me.
Some pretty good teams on that side.
Tell me.
So there it is. The infamous ACC index card. It is back. We don't make up the numbers. We don't make a whistle.
Oh,
we don't make a call. We got nothing to do with any theory. Those are the numbers.
Did your phone ring yet?
It will, I'm sure.
Is your phone ring yet?
I don't even look at it sometimes. Right. In fact, I'm going to just turn it over. Somebody tries to get up with me. I'm unavailable till 10:01.
By the way, with Florida State's road win last night, home teams and ACC play are now 24-15. That percentage is right around where we were last year at the end of the season. And we're going to keep an eye on that because it's obviously a different environment this year, right?
No question.
No crowds. Not many, if anybody, are in the seats. And the environments are totally different, but we will keep an eye on that. It's been interesting to watch so far in the ACC. Sit tight. Tony Bennett. We taped this yesterday after the show. His team's supposed to play tomorrow night against NC State. Ball game got shelved. We'll talk to the coach about where the Cavaliers are after shooting at a huge basket on Saturday at Little John Coliseum next on the Atlantic Coast Conference Television Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. We got ourselves a little Tony Bennett action coming up here, Wes. We had a chance to touch base with the coach yesterday after the program, and life is good right now in Charlottesville, especially with the way the Hoos looked on Saturday night. In fact, all last week. They looked good against Notre Dame, but awesome down at Little John Coliseum.
And we start our visit by saying the basket was huge on Saturday against the Tigers for Virginia. But on the whole, what did he learn about his team in the win over the Tigers?
Well, obviously we tried to come in as ready as we could be. I've got great respect for Brad and the Clemson program, and they're playing good basketball. And I always acknowledge that probably were rusty, so part of it was them not being, they had a pause and not being at the top of their game. But we were right. And it did start, defensively we were in the right spots and made them earn, and they did miss some shots. And offensively we had a nice rhythm, and then again, I've been part of both sides of that. We just started getting it going, and then this is our second game where we've had five guys in double figures. And that's really, when you can have that spread and then, get the shooting that we did. The saying, shooting covers over a multitude of mistakes. And again, we didn't have too many mistakes defensively, and then with that shooting, it kind of ballooned like that. And again, a credit to certainly not to take anything away from our guys. They played well and were ready, and Clemson was, not at their best.
Coach, I want to kind of break into a coaching 101 here. You've had great success. When you see a team get better throughout the course of a season, do you actually have a hard time sleeping at night just with the anticipation of, I can't wait to see what practice looks like tomorrow, or I can't wait to see what our next game looks like? Because your team, from a snapshot of what December looked like versus what we saw Saturday, and even before that, when you shut the lights out, scored a bunch of points against Notre Dame, you have seen this team get better on both ends. From your personal standpoint, how excited do you get, and how do you have to kind of back off a little bit before you just go nuts, thinking, oh, my God, I can't wait for tomorrow?
I sleep well. I'm okay with that one, so I don't have any issues there. So, no. I'm just tired usually, so that's why I sleep well. It's a long year. But, I think, I look at last year's team, and I was so proud of last year's team because I thought they reached as close to their full potential. I always look at that with teams. How close can you get them to maxing out? And that's what you're always working towards. And this team, yes, you're right. No, they have improved. We got humbled by Gonzaga, who's an excellent team. And, we had some troubles early. But we've been playing better. I think the key to that is you're beatable by anyone. You have work to do, but you get excited and hopeful for what you can accomplish when you are getting better on both ends of the floor and guys are getting more comfortable. So I just think it's a reality that you're never as good as you think, and you're probably never as bad as you think. And the game always dictates that. You step between those lines and you just get ready. So that's the look, and you put it into practice and you just keep getting better and honoring the process. And again, grateful for the improvement, because there's some stretches this year where I was like, well, we're struggling. So it's good to see guys kind of coming together and understanding what we need to do.
I know we talked about guard play earlier in the year when I had you guys against Kent State and things you were asking Kihei and Reese to do together. So for that reason, I'm asking you, I'm looking at their collective numbers here. They got 70 assists and 31 turnovers combined. So I can do the math, although Pac will tell you that'd be shaky at times to know that they're playing pretty well. Are you getting what you want from the combination of those guys? And I'm not going to ask you individually, because I'm looking at it collectively.
Yeah, I've been fortunate here to, going back to, Malcolm Brogdon and London Fuentes, and then Ty Jerome and Kihei Clark. Even when I coached at Washington State, when I played, when you can have a majority of the time two lead guards or even three guards on the floor that can handle the ball, make good decisions, touch the paint, and guard, that's helpful. And I think for Reese, being in his first year, he's adjusting and doing some good things, and Kihei continues to do that. So I've liked that. You always, to play against good competition, there's certain things you have to start with, and valuing the basketball. We kept talking about being ball strong against Clemson's defense, and those guys have done a good job by that stat. taking care of the ball, but also being assertive enough to create for others and themselves. And so good guard play with decision making, and then obviously on the other side of the floor, being able to keep the ball in front and pressure it are significant.
Coach, we're so used to your defense being so good, but is this your best offensive team, at least potentially?
I think DeAndre and Ty and Kyle would take a little offense to that. I think Joe Harris and Malcolm, I think you got some arguments there to battle with before you. I think what's unique about this team right now, and again, we're still early in improvement, when you have, you know, we're playing Jay at the five, Huff, Sam at the four, and then at times Trey. You know, they can stretch the floor from the five spot, the four spot, you know, even the three. And so that's that can put some pressures on it. And again, everybody, you know, it's one or two games where you're going, but there's some potential with the shooting. But we've had some pretty talented offensive players. This is just almost like a little bit of an invert of some of our other teams where we scored when it was, again, DeAndre, Ty, Kyle, or Malcolm and, you know, Joe with, you know, Anthony Gill and some of those. So if that makes sense, but sure. Too early to say that right now, but I obviously like the last few games, what they've done. And they can present some matchup problems, but, you know, too early to tell.
All right. We got into this briefly yesterday when we talked to Coach Greenberg on our Monday show, in that two of the more interesting player development stories you've had at Virginia have been DeAndre Hunter and now Jay Huff, ironically both redshirted as freshmen. Can you speak to the value of that at this particular point for Jay and what it meant to DeAndre? Obviously, he ended up having a first-round pick career. Jay looks like he has come miles, and I keep looking back to that redshirt thinking, boy, what a smart move that might have been for him.
Yeah, it's always the question, you know, and it's a pretty easy answer depending upon the situation. Am I going to be better as a first year? Or am I going to be better as a fifth year, you know, if it goes that long? And I think we've had really good success. There's just no question. You watch guys mature. You're a better player when you're, you know, 22 or 23 versus 18 or 19, and you just get better. And it's not a, you know, a valued commodity, the patience and waiting for things in our basketball world. But, it's so few can go early and make it and be good. And those who can develop their game. I think of Joe Harris and Malcolm Brogdon, you know, mm-hmm. who played 5 years, 4 years in our program. They just developed. And, you know, even with DeAndre, there's something about the physical maturity. Big guys are a little different. And then there's the, you know, the just your game. It improves. So all that stuff, I think, you know, matters. And I think the red shirt has proven, but harder. And it's getting harder. You know, if you want to go down the road, now you can transfer without sitting a year. All those things come into play. But to look at it for us, Devin Hall, I got a long list of those. That's the model at times at Wisconsin. Not necessarily redshirting, but can you get them to their upperclassmen years? Will they be patient? Because it'll be good for their future. Forget about, yes, your team success, of course, but for their future. It's not about getting to a professional career. It's about staying and lasting and being. You get that one chance and, you know, my limited experience, I played 15 minutes or whatever as an NBA. You got to be ready to get that chance. If you're not ready, unless you're a first rounder or elite, you're going to be bounced out of there. And that's reality. And a lot of people don't understand the truth of that.
You're right about that. By the way, what was the one thing you learned the most about the Gonzaga game? Because you guys have certainly responded since then.
Yeah, they're really good. I learned that.
Yeah, obviously. They're really good.
No, that I don't ever want to go to Texas again and play on the 26th. No, I learned, I think that, you know, that was a real, I've had a number of those games and it forces you to look in the mirror and say, okay, where are we at? What do we have to address? And not that our guys thought they were better than they are or I did. I just think we realized, There's a big gap between elite teams right now and where we are. So let's go to work and address what we need to. Let's make some adjustments offensively, not huge adjustments. Let's kind of fine-tune personnel. We've shortened a little bit our rotation. And let's just work like there's no tomorrow and be a better team, you know, defensively, efficiency-wise, and know that if we're not right or not ready, that's a possibility that can happen. And again, that's the humble pie that you hate, but it can, there can be good from it.
I'm always fascinated by the way you refer to organization and structure and all the things that make for success. What have you had to rely on this year that you weren't sure you were going to need in order for this season to continue on and be successful?
Hope. I mean that sincerely, because you always need that, but the uncertainty, of, are you going to play? Is there going to be a delay? We have another delay. This is the third one with the COVID issues, with all that's going on. I think there's a good verse, be patient in suffering or affliction, but be joyful in hope. There's hope in what the ability to come together, to play, to practice, to learn through losses, to maybe get the next game, and just be hopeful for what hopefully will come with the future and with things like that. So you lean on that. I know that sounds, I hope it doesn't sound strange. I think people realize that more than just basketball, but you have to look to that when there's a lot of uncertainty. And that's what buoys you, or that's what's your kind of, your rock in these times.
Coach, did you realize, on a completely separate note, that since 2013, you are 22-1 against Notre Dame and Clemson? Does that make any sense whatsoever?
No, we've had a good run in the ACC. I mean, that's there've been a lot of good games, close games, and I'm thankful, because a lot of people, so much is brought about the success of what do you win a championship? Do you get to, how far do you go in the NCAA tournament? And that is, but those of us who coach in conference play and over the long haul, that's where, you find maybe the most consistent team. So I'm thankful for how consistent, over these years our guys have been. I never take that for granted, because this league is so good, and there's such good coaching and talented players. And again, I've been fortunate enough to coach these guys we've talked about, and there's been some maturity in the program that has helped a lot.
Well, we know that the ball game this week's postponed, and you're scheduled to host Georgia Tech on Saturday, which leaves you Sunday. And Aaron Rodgers plays Tom Brady in the NFC Championship game at Lambeau Field. And I'm not going to let you get away without at least getting some sort of thought about your team playing the Buccaneers for a chance to go to the Super Bowl at one of the greatest venues in all of sports now. I know you got it running through you this week about the Packers.
Yeah, I'm at home right now, but I got my Brett Favre signed ball in my office at at college. We play Syracuse on Monday, so right, you get a 1 day turnaround to prepare for a Syracuse zone, and then you got the Packers and the Bucks play. We got some things battling there. But I used to, a quick short story, really cool. When I was, after my college days, I was getting ready for my professional career, and I got to know actually Coach Holmgren and the strength and conditioning coach, some of the Packer players, and they used to let me condition in their weight room and also do things as I was getting ready, and they let me go out and run some sprints and do things in Lambeau Field. Now, you talk about inspiring, and I can remember doing my, I'm out of college, doing my running workout, and I'd start on the goal line, and he's at the 50, the 40, and I'm running down there in Lambeau Field, imagining, and thank God no one's in there, but I'm like, living the dream in my mind, and just growing up or going to college, high school, college, and being in Green Bay during that time, it's really special. That'll be amazing, and I'll be curious what that weather will be like, and you talk about two legends at quarterback, but I'm hopeful for the Packers, and I think they're poised and ready to go, so, but never count out, obviously, Tom Brady.
Listen, it's always a pleasure. Keep up the great success. And if you get into any more debates with your better half regarding football, we're your guys. Remember that. We're your guys.
Yeah. I got a little, before we were on the air, your way with the ladies didn't impress me, so I think I'm going to stick to my own guns here, okay?
hey, Bennett, take it at your own risk there. You know, anything we can do to help you, we're here for you. That's all I'm going to let you know.
I'll remember that. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, and forget it at the same time. Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it. Be well. That's Tony Bennett, the head basketball coach of Virginia. We're grateful for his time, and good luck to Virginia, the Cavaliers, later in the week.
Yeah, or away with the ladies and Bennett doesn't want any help. Come on, man. Whatever we can do for Coach, we're here for him. We're here for him. That's all I'm going to say.
How much, I mean, every time, and again, this crosses the board here. There are no silos of exclusivity here. But every time we get to talk with coaches in particular, student athletes as well, the perspective we get on what we're going through from an athletic standpoint, Pack, is fascinating to me. Just, you know, kind of how everybody has their own methodology, if you will, their own system about trying to get through. And then each time with Tony Bennett, the Green Bay Packers story, running program at Lambeau Field. I mean, there's always something with him, right? He's such a fascinating guy, and what a whale of a basketball coach, needless to say. But always enjoy our visits and always get something out of it, too.
Yeah, he's great. You know, listen, his success at Virginia, you now include them in the blue blood conversation. It's kind of like Leonard Hamilton and what he's done in Florida State. You know, you got the traditional, you know, Duke, North Carolina's, the Louisville's of the world. But, man, what Virginia has turned into. And when you look at the numbers, as far as like the last 7 years, I mean, they really have been the dominant force in the league. They really have. I mean, they've taken people to woodsheds, and including Clemson on Saturday with that performance in terms of, you're ranked in the top 20. That's cool. Watch this. You're down 35. And he's very humble. The thing I like about him the most, he's about as down-to-earth a dude as you'd ever want to deal with.
Yeah.
And he has it everything in perspective. And I still go back to maybe the lowest moment when they got bumped from a 16 beating a 1, and that interview that he did immediately after the game. To me, if he never wins another game, I will always think of Tony Bennett as one of the classiest people that have ever graced a sideline in this sport, in basketball, in the ACC. He just handles everything with grace and class, first class.
You got that right. Got two ball games tonight. One's the headliner, and that's obviously Duke's visit to Pitt at 9 o'clock on ESPN with Dan Shulman and John Crispin. 7 o'clock on ACC Network tonight, you get a look at Miami and Syracuse. We'll come back and talk about the Orange and the Canes. And what? Right at the Dome. We'll do all that and more when Packer and Durham rolls on a Tuesday right after this.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. Steve Wiseman's going to join us coming up in about 25 minutes or so, talk about the Duke-Pitt game and other things. Dr. White stepping down, going to resign, retire, do his thing. Curious, that'll be an interesting thing to get into with him. But we'll worry about that coming up around 9:15. Mm-hmm. And Raekwon Gray from Florida State, after their big win again last night, will join us around 9:30. But we've talked a lot about the Pitt game with Duke. We've also got Syracuse and Miami tonight. And the Canes have almost been impossible to figure, because every time you think that they're, well, they've only got 7 scholarship guys, who can they beat? Well, how about Louisville over the weekend? No problem. Took care of business. And here's Syracuse, Wes, I think kind of needing a dose of some positivity. I mean, after getting smoked, especially that defensive effort in the second half against Pittsburgh over the weekend, for the next 5 at home, as I pointed out, it seems like now is the time for Syracuse. If they're going to make a move, it's got to start tonight against Miami.
It is starting to feel a little bit like if the Orange is going to do something, really, that's the interesting part about the 7 o'clock game in my mind, is if the Orange and the Canes are both going to do something, they got to think about doing it right now, don't they? Yep. I mean, in Miami's case, a win tonight potentially sets the table for them to, I don't know, win 4 of their next 5, 3 of their next 4, that kind of thing. Building a little bit of momentum here would be interesting, certainly from that perspective. I think from a Syracuse side, you also have to look at the schedule and start thinking a little bit about how this is all going to set up, because you're looking at, you know, you're playing tonight, and then you're going to turn around and you're going to get a ball game on the weekend with Virginia Tech. So you think about it tonight, and the Hokies are going to be real now. They're going to be ready to play. So when you start looking at how some of this is going to set up, Pack, I think it's very, very interesting for both Jim Boeheim and Jim Larrañaga, and kind of their team health mentally. the way this thing kind of dials itself. I mean, you get Miami tonight, Virginia Tech Saturday. You heard Tony Bennett say at Virginia next Monday. Then you get NC State at home the following Sunday, and then Louisville. It feels like a big stretch, really, kind of for both schools tonight, doesn't it? And the winner kind of catapults himself going forward. The loser, still searching somewhat. And by the way, Syracuse, 1-3, and kind of staring at this one a little bit after the loss you mentioned at Pittsburgh over the weekend.
Well, when you start taking inventory of the rest of the league, if you expect to be an upper-tier team, top-five team in this conference, you got to start putting together some wins and going on a run. And Syracuse, I think, probably looks at this schedule right now coming up. Again, knock on wood that these games are played. That's the first thing. But if you got four out of five at home, you got to hold serve. You've already given one up at home when you lost to Pitt. That was a game that, I mean, you had that one comfortably in your back pocket. And to Pitt's credit, they came back and beat you. Then they smoked you over the weekend. So I think from a mental standpoint for Syracuse, this is kind of a critical couple weeks coming up. In my read on Miami, like I told you, they're playing with both hands tied behind their back in some respects. I mean, Wong went off with the 30 spot against Louisville on Sunday night or Saturday. And I just kind of feel with Miami, if they were completely healthy, I think they're a problem in the league. I mean, they've really played well, but they just don't have any bodies. They got seven scholarship guys, and you almost kind of feel that every time they win a game, they've stolen one from somebody because they're playing at such a disadvantage from a personnel standpoint, given the injuries. But that's why I keep telling you, Larrañaga, in my opinion, has done as good a coaching job as anybody in this conference this year, given what he's got to work with. So, to me, Miami's kind of playing with house money a little bit, if that makes any sense. That, you know, every win they get, given that they got five guys on scholarship sitting there on the bench wearing a suit, man, you take it and you run with it. But Syracuse has to start holding serve and looking the part if they're going to kind of jump back into this upper tier. And it's got to start tonight. You got to win this game.
Miami won the game last year in the regular season. They won 69-65 in overtime. So traditionally, these are close games. I have been for the most part. Now, there have been a couple 20 spots in there, but looking back over the last four meetings, there's been a five, there's been an overtime game, there's been a seven, there has been a 20 in there. Elijah Hughes went for 22 a couple of years ago, and they won by 20 going away. But Miami-Syracuse, this will be an interesting game. 7 o'clock here on the network with Dave O'Brien and Corey Alexander. I'm going to keep an eye on Joe Girard, too, because I'm not – he's kind of – I don't want to say regress, but that's really about the only way to describe it. He's not had the sophomore campaign that I think a lot of us thought he was going to have. Buddy Boeheim has hit some highs and lows, had a great first half last Tuesday night in Chapel Hill, scoreless in the second half. There were big ball games. You saw Braswell play a little bit more. And the other thing, too, is I was under the impression, maybe, again, wrong on my part, we were kind of led to believe that Barama Sidibe was close to playing after being hurt in the season opener and had surgery on December the 1st. There was some talk that he might be able to return in early January, and we're still kind of waiting on Sidibe to come back. Is tonight the night? Because if so, boy, that could be opportunistic for Coach Boeheim's team as well.
And Cuse really needs him inside. They've been getting pounded on the offensive front, on the defensive rebounding standpoint. And, of course, when you play that zone and you don't have size, man, that's kind of a deadly combination. So this is an important game, I think, big picture. The best news, by the way, for Miami, in my opinion, about this game tonight is that the ESPN BPI picks Syracuse as nearly an 80% clip. That's the best thing Miami's got going for them tonight, because when that BPI leans your way, fake left, go right. That's what I'm learning. I don't know what that thing is. I have no earth. I don't know who that is, what it is, who's involved behind the scenes, behind the door. I don't know, but fake left, go right. But Miami has surprised me all year. They really have, and that includes that game against Louisville. I didn't think there was any way in the world they'd win that game, and they did. So we'll see if Jim Larrañaga can take it on the road. I didn't expect them to win in NC State. They did. So they've been able to win big games at home, big games on the road. I think they'll go up there and say, hey, we're going to play hard. They're going to be well coached. And for Syracuse, you better start making some shots, and you better start holding on to leads. You got to close.
Is that the BPI or the VBDI?
I have no idea.
That we're talking about.
After a while, your head explodes. That's all I know. Your head explodes.
There we go. All right. Sit tight. You know what's next. You follow this program on a regular basis? Power Hour. Steve Weissman will join us from Raleigh. Covers Duke for the News and Observer. We'll talk to him about kind of where the Duke Athletics Director search could go with Kevin White's retirement peg for August. Raekwon Gray of Florida State also in the last 60 minutes of Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.